dbkmediaservices.com.
You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk Podcast. SBC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. And now, here are your hosts, Shane Combs, John Bruce, and Bruce Knox.
Hello, everybody out there in SVC land. This is Bruce Knox with you for show number 242, season 8 of Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. This and all shows in our series brought to you by, of course, our friends at Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Located at 1 Nancy Wilson Way in Chillicothe, right off of Bridge Street, just behind the Hampton Inn. They're busy and open 7 days a week from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. You'll find all your Cardo's pizzas and good eats. You'll have all kinds of activities to do. They've got soccer going on. I do know that. They always have soccer going on. And, of course, the sports arcade, super inflatable land. That's what we live for out there. And if you have an occasion, I know prom is not that far away. You might contact them at Triple Crown about limousine rental. Enough said, right, John? We don't want to talk anymore about that. We're over that now. We're hurt, but we're over it because we didn't get to ride it.
Maybe we'll get it for the trademark big game next week.
Oh, that's a possibility. You can arrive in style to the big game, courtesy of Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Give them a call, 740-773-7529. We appreciate that. When you think of fun, think of Triple Crown. And as I've already alluded to, we have with us Mr. John Bruce tonight. John is he has fewer kinks in his belt than the rest of us do, I think, Shane. But he's been here for almost two-thirds of a season now. So we also invite in and welcome our main guy, the head cheese, the pick of the pack, number one and rising higher all the time, Mr. Shane Combs.
Wow. I'm not paying Bruce nearly enough.
That's exactly right.
Sounds like you're paying him plenty.
Yeah. The truth will hurt. The truth will set you free, Shane. That's right. Yes. Well, guys, we're back for another exciting edition of our SVC Sports Talk. And as we normally do, we're going to get right into the fray. Hoop headlines on the boys' side of things. And as we normally do, we're going to go to John. I'm sure he will not disappoint as he gives us his hoop headline for the week on the boys' side. John?
Just like a modern-day secretariat, Cam Evans starting to pull away down the backstretch. Just like the thoroughbred, 77? I think that was the year secretariat just destroyed everyone. Maybe it was 73. So Cam, he's been out. Otherworldly player this year, as we kind of all know. He even threw down a dunk on Saturday, which I'm not sure if he had done it in a game before.
I saw that. That was impressive.
But, yeah. 32 points on only 15 shots. St. Trey's dominates again over Southeastern. He wasn't alone either. Nick Nesser and Triton Davidson combined for 22 points on 11 for 15 shooting. So those three combined, 54 points on 22 of 30 shooting. Have fun with that.
Not bad.
I mean, yeah, and they're all juniors. And that's and that's not even mentioning Colby Swain. So, I mean, and that's he kind of elevated himself even more this week, most likely in the player of the year race. I still think that, you know, Elijah McCloskey, Alex Blanton need to be mentioned, but man, Cam's been he's been otherworldly this year. And he continues to do it as St. Trace is only a couple games away from a gold basketball.
Yep. 1973, John, actually, for Secretary.
73.
Yep. Google is your friend. Keep that in mind.
Yes.
Okay. Hoop headlines for the boys' side, Mr. Shane. What you got?
Question of rematch almost answered. You know, we asked the question there after the first showdown of Zane Trace at Adina. John and I talked in detail on here. Could it get back to a 12-1 versus 13-0? And at the time, we didn't think it was impossible. We thought it would certainly be difficult because of all the challenges and the parity. But as championship basketball teams do this time of year, they're starting to even space themselves a little bit. Doing it with a lot of focus, doing it on the road, doing it at home, doing it on back-to-backs. I think the schedules, I don't have them in front of me, John. I think Zane Trace has their Westfall and Piketon games left. Now, Piketon certainly gave them a scare the first time. Westfall's been playing really, really well. Adina would have their trip to Huntington and then the Uniota at Adina, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, so, obviously, that was those were two opponents that really gave Adina fits. I know Huntington was within – you know, a couple possessions there in the final 2-3 minutes of that game, and then Uniota Adina played a 2-point game. So that proof of parity that we talk about is still there to threaten. It was on display this past weekend. You know, Westfall Uniota ended up splitting their season series. Huntington Piketon split their season series. Certainly enough parity out there to still very worthy of Zane Trace and Adina's attention. And I'm sure those two teams are getting reminded about that by their coaches. But at this point, they just separated. You mentioned the Zane Trace stats, really, really impressive. I echo everything you said. I think even in that Evans performance, it was 4-for-4 from the 3-point line. And
I didn't know it was the 4-for-4.
Yeah, when he hits, I think we've all agreed that's the biggest improvement in his game. You know, when he shoots it with efficiency from the perimeter, he becomes even more impossible to match up with and keep in front. And then on the Adina side, their balance has just been incredible. The ability to put 3, 4, 5 different kids up around the 8 to 20 mark. Fout had a really nice weekend. Yes. Had a huge game Friday night. Came back with 18 Saturday night. He had a dunk himself at Paint Valley the other night. I just think the play of Bennett and Garrison, the length in the guard play, and gosh, their best basketball is still ahead of them. That's what's so scary about them, just being sophomores. Their bodies are going to fill out. They're going to get stronger. Sykes has been impressive. Fogelsong was impressive. Even Throckmorton starting to get healthier and healthier from the football injury each time I see him. Shipley's been shooting it well. And, you know, I've been real, real impressed with what they've been able to do. So the two more big tests ahead for each of them, but that's kind of where they go. I know Adina hit 9 3-pointers in that Paint Valley win the other night. So, you know, again, when they use that weapon, it's pretty impressive. But, you know, Bruce, we talked about it. Parity is one thing and beating up on each other, but a lot of times playing with a team for, say, 24 minutes and then being able to beat them over 32 minutes is two different things.
Sure, sure. All righty, that's our hoop headlines for the boys' side. This segment brought to us by North Fork Animal Clinic, Dr. Blake Lloyd and his staff in Chillicothe at 2260 Anderson Station Road, where we care. You know, a good veterinarian's got to know each and every animal being treated and the temperament of each pet. Those pets have likes and dislikes just like people do. Shane likes Mountain Dew, for example. Don't know where that's going, but I my dog does not like Mountain Dew. Our practice is limited to small animals, so we get to know everything about our patients, and they know them just like family, and they know what their owners want, how they want to treat their animals as well. So to call Dr. Blake Lloyd, 740-773-7387, and get your small animal in there to have him or her looked at. And John can attest, they take good care of you out there. All right.
Definitely.
All right. Headlines on the girls' side, or hoop headlines. John, you got a good one for us?
Thank you for going to me first, because I think Shane was probably going to take mine.
Okay. Well, you did send me that check.
Yes.
Yes.
I had to.
Okay.
Congratulations to Josie Fisher on her big weekend, and to Braden Collins, who just keeps on climbing up the scoring list. With a layup in the third quarter on Saturday against last fall, Josie joined the 1,000 point club. And also that day, she made a verbal commitment for college volleyball. So it was a really big day for her. Really cool to see her, to see how it, it was no JV girls game that day, but it appeared the entire JV girls team was there to help her celebrate. Just showing what type of kid Josie really is. Just extremely solid, fundamental player, level-headed over her whole athletic career. Doesn't try to do too much, although I do think Coach Fisher, Coach Miller sent her out to shoot a corner three to try to get it the other day, to kind of an homage to her freshman year when she was a little bit more of a shooter. But just doesn't let little things affect her play. Doesn't try to force anything. Just really a joy to watch. I mean, I watched you guys at Pay Valley the other day defend her, and she just took what she could get. I mean, she didn't try to force it. She knew she had a really good post defender and 6'3" Kelsey down on her, and you know, she didn't try to do too much. And that's what makes her such a great player. And also, just wanted to throw out that Braden is steadily climbing up the list. She's up to 16, almost 1,500 career points, which is insane for, just a 4-year career, let alone pretty much a 3-year career on the varsity level. And I would guess that she'll get into the top 10. I had stored that because I thought Shane was going to go first. So, yeah. But I really do want to give out just a big shout out to Josie and then also Braden on just their great careers and just everything they do, especially how they carry themselves as, people also.
All right, Shane, I'll bet you've got a good one this time.
Well, I was kind of like John. I had about two or three different ways we could go to make sure that we were honoring people the proper way. I did have a quiet domination one. That was the way I was going to describe Josie Fisher there, John. It's so impressive just how I use quiet in a very complimentary way. It's been so quiet, yes, and so efficient, and it's been so much within what they do. And obviously playing on championship teams throughout her career, and again this year, she's never had to go outside of their scheme to like get hers, so to speak. You know what I mean? It's just always happened right in system. And, you know, as they inch closer to gold here, it's just been really, really impressive how she's been able to do that. I think it's awesome that you mentioned Braden as well. She's now 106 points away from Bryden Ball, which she's able to go past that. That would take her into the top 10 there. Lexi Woods from Paint Valley, remember, last year, John got to 1588. She's actually ninth. So that's who she would be pushing.
That's another one who kind of did it over 3 years because, I mean, she had a shortened senior year also.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So, yeah.
And the only other thing I'll mention on Josie before I get to more of a headline, Bruce, to, that we can honor people is I've had the privilege. I'm at an age where I've had the privilege of watching every 1,000 point score at Uniote on the girls' side. Aubrey Evelyn and I graduated together, grew up watching Lori McClellan, Natalie Hill, Speakman, McWhorter, Alexis Overly's terrific, Janae Driggs, Natalie Miller. Obviously, Josie's a volleyball coach. So Josie fits just fine on that list. Again, just a terrific young lady, terrific athlete, three-sport athlete, does it the right way. Really, really happy for her. I think she represents everything that Coach Miller would want a Uniota Lady Sherman to represent. So I thought that was well said, John. The one I want to go and honor, since John went that direction, is I wanted to just honor what Coach Scott's doing at Edina with that Lady Warriors program. It's been terrific the way from the ground up. I applaud the Edina school system for sticking with it and hanging in there with it. They're just a really, really improved basketball team. You could see it coming over the last 2-3 weeks. And I think a lot of us in the league even mentioned it last year at the second half of the year in terms of it was coming. But I know in the Paint Valley Edina game the other day, I think 5 freshmen started, 3 on the Paint Valley side, 2 on Edina. And I think Edina ended up playing 2 to 3 more. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it kind of gives you an idea that freshman class You know, we talk a lot about Basie there at Huntington, and rightfully so. But again, we've talked about a lot of different young kids in this league that are going to be around. Nadine is certainly going to be at the center of that. So I just thought it was I know he's going through some tough times with family right now, and our thoughts and prayers consistently go out to him. And I just wanted to give credit to the girls there, but at the same time, from coach to coach, just tell Coach Scott that he's doing just an incredible job, and that's something I felt like needed to be addressed.
Good stuff there, gentlemen, on the headlines, the hoop headlines for both boys and girls. So we're going to move along now. A lot of fan feedback this week. And next up, we unpack it all, discuss things such as step back jumpers, confusing standings, and the always popular all day events. As we get into the next segment here of episode 242, I'm going to tell you it's brought to you by Crown Hill Golf Club. Crown Hill, located at 9500 U.S. Route 22 West, Williamsport. Telephone number 740-986-4653. And you can look them up on the web at crownhillgolfclub.com. And Shane, as we've talked about for the past 3 weeks or so, I think they've got a special program going on out there for the youth. Why don't you kind of tell us a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. We've mentioned on past shows here that the job that they do up there at Crown Hill for our just our young people, just our golf programs in general. And what they're using is the simulator, and they're offering some different opportunities come up during the winter and work on your game, get some instruction. For more details, just get a hold of Kevin up there. You can email at kidsplaygolf2, that's T-O-O, at yahoo.com. Again, that's kidsplaygolf2 at yahoo.com, or you can give Kevin a call there with some of the information that Bruce is always good to pass out for us.
Sure. Telephone number 740-986-4653. All kinds of details there on the web at crownhillgolfclub.com. We appreciate their support. Guys, the feedback this week kind of ran over a bunch of different topics. We've pulled out a few here. I want to talk about the first one, what we call new, that's in quote marks, new moves such as the Euro step and the one that I'm really good at, Shane, the step back jumper.
Well, what I've tried to do this week, guys, is I always feel so guilty. I mean, we've kind of extended our show time this year a little bit to get a little bit more on and get a little bit more coverage, but what I tried to do here is I always feel bad leaving stuff out, so I've looked for different ways to combine some things, and there's been a couple different things over the last 2 to 3 weeks about some fundamental work and some of these, like I said, the one email referred to new and in quotes there. One referred to a couple videos that were out the other night with some different I don't know, moves at the high school game, some of our local kids. And I think that's becoming more of a thing, John, like you said, both of us saw the Evans dunk and so forth. You know, these reporters or different people from their huddle coverage, they're able to put different things out. So you start to see more and more highlights of the high school game, which I think is really cool. But the question I guess I'll throw to you first to start our discussion is, I don't know how new the Euro step is necessarily, right, but it's certainly something that is more from this generation here. But and then the step back jumper is certainly a term, and there's different versions of it. Certainly a term that's starting to become more and more with your James Harden of the world and so forth. Yeah. But just start maybe the discussion. Just when you hear those terms, like where are they at in the game and in your individual instruction? I know you do a lot of individual work as I do. Just your thoughts on this.
Well, one thing I'm so glad the Eurostep's not like brand new anymore, and maybe because I'm not in the crowd as much, but man, when it first came out, it was just hearing screaming of, "That's a travel!" All the time. I'm so glad people are kind of starting to get used to it, to where, you know, a really one that's done really well can make so many different things happen, because if you can get the defense going one way and then you just do the nice little smooth step to the other side for a layup or possibly a kick out. I mean, if you can do it right and practice the Euro step, you should, I mean, it should be part of any ball handler's game, especially going on fast breaks. Obviously, you shouldn't just rely on it as one thing, but if you can show it once, well, then you're going to be able to open yourself up a little bit more other times also. So I like anything that makes the game move a little better, kind of in any way of like I like scoring. Like I appreciate good defense, but at the same time, I like to see kids score. And anytime you can do it, and I like it. It's not just a move to look good. It's a move to get somewhere. And the step back jumper, I saw one. Derek actually tweeted it out the other day. It looked just like a James Harden, including with the multiple extra steps involved in it. That's the only worry I have about with the kind of Harden step back jumper is it's definitely a travel. I mean, it's I like to see. But like we've talked about where defenses are allowed to kind of mug kids on the outside now, I like to see things where kids can get open and show their skill sets off a good bit. So I like the newer moves, and I like to see that kids are working hard to put them involved in their game.
Well, I agree on the Euro step there. I think that it's really kind of a clever way to play in space, and as kids get more and more comfortable with it, I think what I always try to show in moves is you always drill with a purpose, but then you hope that they master it to a point where it's more of a reaction move on the drive. You know, sometimes I think young kids when they're first starting to do it, they almost predetermine that they're going to do it. And sometimes they use it when it's not needed, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? It's almost becomes more of a show thing, where I think the ultimate development of the skill is to develop a skill and then be able to instinctively use it when that situation in the game calls for it. Now, John, I couldn't agree with you more on the step back jumper. The step back jump. I'm almost to the point here, and I promise I'm not trying to be sarcastic. I'm almost to the point where I'm debating if I need to start teaching it wrong. You know what I'm saying? Like I'm almost to the point of where, hey, in the first quarter, try it this way. Then if they call it, do it right. You know what I'm saying? It's one of those things where it really is, because it's such an advantage. I'll kind of use the spin move as the same way. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you think about it, John, a lot of times if I'm driving down the middle and I go to spin, technically I've got to get my foot down as I spin around to the basket. Well, that's a lot higher level move and got to go. If we're going to allow kids just to spin and go 1-2 all the time into the paint, that's hard to defend, right? I mean,
yes.
There's a reason we dribble. Because if we take off running off the ball, it's harder to guard. So it's one of those things where you're almost filling out, like if you're playing against a kid who uses the spin move a lot and they don't do it correctly, gosh, you hope you have an officiating crew that night that's going to call it. And the step back's a little bit the same way. I couldn't the shot the young man hit was terrific, but I have to admit, I was almost sitting here laughing. I didn't want to interrupt you. I was almost laughing at the same thing. It's travel. You know what I'm saying? Like it's a situation.
It's unguardable.
If I take the ball and I dribble and the left foot is my pivot foot, okay, I pick my dribble up and I just basically run 1-2 to my right, that's a travel. And you know what's happening with the spin move and the step back dribble is a lot of times if you go right into a shot off of it, you'll get away with it. Mm-hmm. If you stop and then pivot, that's when usually it just looks so so drastic awkward that they have to call it. Yeah. So I will give these players credit. They are so smooth in the way they go about doing it. It is good. But in all seriousness, a lot of times and I think what I would tell some of our undersized guards, you know, be careful seeing these things and thinking you have to incorporate it in their game. A lot of times there's some quick low dribble type of moves, John, that I would maybe teach to the smaller guard, more of the 5'7", 5'8 kid on the boys' side, or like the 5'1", 5'2 kid on the girls' side. I think a lot of times your longer guards, trying to think of some examples. Emily Coleman uses the Euro step very well for a tall guard on the girls' side. She's very clever around the rim. The Adina guards that I referred to with their length, they're pretty clever around the rim. So, and there's plenty of others. Evans is terrific in the way he kind of sidesteps. He's so hard to take charges against because he can sidestep and get shots off.
He had one against us where one of our two league leaders in charges taken got in perfect position, and he just swooped around and ended up getting a block called because we had to move over to try to take the charge on him. Because that was on a dead fast break. So, yeah.
On the step back, I know like McCloskey and Blanton are very good with that. Now, yeah, every now and then I'll catch them maybe going a little 1-2 on the step. But again, into the shot, you'll kind of get away with it in today's game. And that's the whole point of, I'm not here to try to pick the move apart. I'm honestly here to learn. Like, it's kind of a coach's corner type of thing of, I'm almost trying to adjust to the game a little bit in terms of giving a little bit more in my individual workouts to the footwork there a little bit in order to help that kid get even more space on those types of moves. If you think about it. So, it was a good discussion point, Bruce. I thought it was a good email. I had a couple people talk to me at the game the other night. We broke into discussion a little bit, and I just thought that was something we would go ahead after they had talked to me about it. I knew the one email had come in a few weeks ago, and I thought that would make for nice discussion there.
All right. Our next topic from our fan feedback is confusing standings.
Well, this is happening on both sides, John. We mentioned earlier how teams are splitting and so forth, and you know, our girls' league is just, you know, you take Uniota and Huntington away from the top, and you go that 3-7 mix, and you've just got a complete circus. On the boys' side, you take away Zane Trace and Adina, and basically 3-8, you have a complete, you know. Mm-hmm. Group of parity there, and some different matchups and so forth. And the question basically is referring to, like, how in the world is this happening? You know, like, they'll talk about how they understand, like, in baseball from round one to round two, you might have a different pitching matchup, or but they'll say, like, in volleyball, you just don't really see this that often, or in some of these other sports, you just don't see it. Why is it, like? They even refer to, I understand how one team can win one time and another team can win another, but it's happening so much. And in some cases, you're seeing 30, 35, 40-point turnarounds. And really, the only thing I can tell them is it's just the nature of the sport. You know, you've heard me talk about, John, you've heard me talk about on SVC Sports Talk before, like, volleyball is just not a sport that presents itself for upsets or for, you know what I mean, like, most of the time, the best volleyball team's going to win. You're playing to a score, so the clock's never going to run out on you. And no matter how bad you play in the first quarter, you've heard me say before that the score starts over. Like, how many times you've been coaching a basketball game where, you know, you're down 9 or 10 at the end of the first quarter, and you're like, man, I really wish we'd start that score over and try again. You know what I'm saying? Like,
that's,
you know,
the best part of sports season.
So it's just, I think it has a lot to do with it. I think, you know, teams get better, teams get hurt. You have two different officiating crews. At one place, this person gets in foul trouble. The next time, this person gets in foul trouble. You know what I mean? There's a lot of dynamics that go there. When you have two teams that are on paper pretty close, you know, sometimes it goes. And the only other thing I'll throw out there, John, I'll throw it to you, is the final score in the sport of basketball is really deceiving. You know, a lot of times, you know, you'll see these 2 and 3 point games, and the final score will end up 7, 8, or 9. Or you'll see a 6, 7, 8 point game, and it'll end up 15. in the last minute or two. So a lot of times when you start saying, so-and-so won by 15 and then lost by 15, if you didn't watch the games, I'd be careful going just on the point spread. Is there anything else you can throw on to why in the world we have so many teams splitting back and forth from first round to second round?
Well, I think a lot of the stuff with the parity you mentioned, some teams are just trying to find who they are. We can use Indiana girls who it appears about halfway through the season they figured out who they are. They've been pretty good since then. So, it still surprised me a little bit, but at the same time, it's just, when you're playing some of the young kids, eventually they're going to kind of figure things out, or at least you hope so, at least. And when you mentioned those big turnarounds and the close games end up as bad ones, I'm going to go to the Elam ending that we talked about over the summer.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Just, hey, first team to set or first team to whatever after with 3 minutes left. Yeah. It wouldn't work, but it's just like, you see some of the games where the score is so different and it's like, well, maybe if they didn't have to foul,
or if they had a shot clock, we could say, it's a 4-point game with 50 seconds to go. I don't need to foul because the shot clock will run out.
Oh. I brought that up. I might have been wrong on it, but I brought it up. it's just like you mentioned with volleyball, the no clock and constant resetting scores. It's not like in basketball we're playing like old CBA rules where you win a quarter, you get points towards the end of the game or whatever, to just try to drum up talk about your league. So, it's just, I think there is so much parity throughout the league. I think there's enough youth in the league where teams are kind of figuring things out on a night-to-night basis, outside of really the top three. We don't have like super consistent top guys for scoring. So you just kind of never know. I'll use our game against Westfall. We shot 1 for 22 on threes. If you've seen some of our kids shoot, you're like, how does that happen? Well, the kids just miss sometimes. You kind of never know, especially when you still have some youth, what can happen with the team. You hope that your team is going to come out every night, play lights out, play exactly to the game plan. Officials are going to call the game exactly how your team wants it to be called.
Right.
So, yeah. And
when we say that as coach, I hope people understand we're not complaining when we say that. That's just exactly a part of the strategy. Like if you're there are certain teams, like, when I'm playing, like if I'm coaching the Paint Valley girls and I'm going to go play Piketon, I need the game called a certain way. If it's called the other way, we're in trouble. You know what I'm saying? Whereas when we're playing Adena, there's a different way we need the game to called. And if it's called the other way, we're in trouble. When we're playing Uniota, it probably doesn't matter. it's one of those things. You know what I'm saying? In terms of same way on the boys' side, I can truly understand if you're guarding Alex Blanton or Elijah McCloskey one night and you've got an official that lets you put their hands on them, well, they're a little easier to guard, I'm sure. You know what I mean? Where if it's one of those where, no, we're getting the hands off from the word go and they're in the bonus the whole second quarter, good luck trying to keep Blanton out of the middle. So, sure, that's just part of strategy.
Yeah, not complaining at all in any way because, like you said, it just depends on who you're playing. If you're playing a team like Zane Trace where they have length and strength everywhere and you can't get inside because they're able to be a little more physical, then you're just like, well, we'll see how this goes. it's just how the game's called. And that's the great part about it. And that's like what you mentioned last week about scouting the officials. Because if you know how a certain officiating group is going to call it, well, you can tell your kids, okay, we can be a little more physical on the outside. That is a big part of the parity also is the, you never know, a lot of times, as long as you take good notes on it before, you have a good idea of what you're going to get officiating wise. And they don't want to be anything different than what they normally are anyway. So, I do think next year it might be a little more consistent on the standings, but for the rest of this year, I think it could be really how the leagues turn out.
I agree. Yeah.
Our third and final topic in our feedback segment here is something I'm interested in hearing all about this, guys. Frustration of all-day event rising. Frustration of all-day event rising, Shane.
Bruce, let me ask you a question first here.
Oh, okay.
Like with all the work you do, in all seriousness, I mean the hours that you put in for Vinton County and so forth, do you have any experience in the TVC or in the Vinton County school there with the all-day event? Have you guys attempted any of these?
I think one time that I can remember, I think I've been doing PA for 13 years or something like that. I think there was one Saturday event like that where it started off maybe junior high or you know, okay, something like that. Or maybe it was as simple. I think we've done a couple times where we had two girls games and three guys games. So.
Well, the reason I asked is I understand, like, maybe I've really been trying to study some perspective on these things. Like, you know, I thought maybe in the TVC there's some crazy bus trips, I know.
Yeah.
That I didn't know maybe if it would make more sense where they tried something like that. But I guess, John, I'm gonna come to you first because I've got about three or four different angles here, and I don't want to hog all the different things here. I just give me a perspective of where you're at on the all-day event and where people that you talk to and maybe just in general how people feel about it.
Maybe I don't talk to the right people, but pretty much nobody I talk to enjoys it. I'm obviously not going to share names or anything, but it depending on the school, you may not have the facilities to host four different teams. I mean, I know ours this year, teams have been in classrooms. Like getting dressed in classrooms is not real necessary. I mean, that's not the end all be all. It's not going to make or break anything, but it's like, man, just don't like having your kids having to get dressed in a classroom instead of a locker room where there's no facilities. Then, you know, it's just there's less and less crowds every year for them. Just to me, that's how I notice it. The quality of games aren't very good. I mean, the matchups this year aren't great either. But have there ever been? It's just, I don't know. It's I feel like we had less people at the, like yesterday, we had less people at the all-day event than would have been if Westfall came down for a girls game on a Thursday or if it was just a boys night on Saturday. It just feels like there's better ways to, I don't even know what the original goal of it was. I don't think it's ever worked. And I think people are just really worn out from it. And it's just I hate it. just to be completely honest, like I'm trying to be nice about it, but I don't think
there's anything to be nice about. It's not being nice for me. It's just it's an event, and you say if you like it or don't like it. I don't know that there's anything to.
Well, one of the things I had heard, it was right after the ill-fated boys play Tuesday, Friday on the first round, girls Thursday, Saturday, then flip that in the second round because our league just tries to do just way too many little things. And I'd heard, well, it'll get the make it to where the girls will play in front of a big crowd. It's like, well, we can do that in different ways. They can play Saturday night games. Like, it's okay for a girls basketball game to be on a Saturday night. Boys can be Tuesday, Friday, whatever, like every other league in the state. It's just like there's got to be a better way to get a better brand of basketball for our league besides doing the all day events that don't do a better brand of basketball. Just overall, it's just I don't think I know about half the league teams have facilities that, you know, you could put everyone in a locker room and it can be comfortable and you can get ready for the games. But about the other half has to drag in whiteboards to different places and get it to where it's even ready for a team to get prepared for the game.
So. Shane, we're waiting with bated breath on what you've got there.
Well, I've fairly tried to break it down with perspective. You know, something I've really, oh yes, you know how open-minded I am. I always try to open-mindedly look at perspective. And I think if you ask different people, you're going to get some different answers, but I tend to agree with John that it's starting to become more of the word I would use is kind of a headache.
Yes.
I think we're all creatures of habit. I think we're different things. First of all, if you start from a player's perspective, I would say on the boys' side that it has to be completely annoying. You know, a lot of times, like, we're splitting the JV boys and then they come back like two and a half, 3 hours later. And if they're with the varsity team or so forth, I do think the girls play in front of one of their best crowds of the year from a girl's side. But I think the more girls I talk to, we'd rather just, you know, dress up, go out with our friends or whatever, and watch boys game on Friday, Saturday night is the feedback I'm getting. If you go to coaches, again, we're always scared to death when kids get out of habit or out of routine. That's usually leads to inconsistency and routine. I think on the fan side, I don't know that fans love it. I think it makes for a really long day. And then I think on the administration side, a lot of them like it. I think that's why they've continued to vote for it. I think they kind of like being able to get it done in one day and maybe get another extra night off. But I thought John touched on the one thing that's really becoming a factor is the locker room facilities are a mess. And it's, I really go back and forth on this. Obviously from an AD, you absolutely hate for a school to be angry or feel like that you weren't hosting it in a classy way or whatever. Sometimes we as coaches or on the player side, John, we get a little stubborn. Hey, it's our home court. We don't want to give up our actual locker room because some of these set up to where you have to give up your actual locker room to, you know, get the locker rooms matched, if that makes sense, because, you know, a lot of these schools set up, Bruce, to where you have your gym locker rooms, but then you have like other rooms off of them that would be like your varsity boys locker room or your varsity girls locker room. So you're giving up your locker room on one side just to make this happen if you don't get creative with like some of the classrooms or some of the different things John said. Overall, I do. I think it's just kind of annoying. I don't know. It's funny you mentioned that, John. I know at their last principal's meeting, they flirted with this Thursday, Saturday, Tuesday, Friday discussion again. And a lot of times,
just go Wednesday, Saturday. I say just go Wednesday, Saturday. Let the middle school go Monday, Thursday. Everyone gets 2 days to prepare for games. Just stop with this one day in between stuff. I don't like it either. I don't know.
That's honestly one of the better ideas I've heard in terms of giving kids 2 days and you can be creative in your thing. I guess I was going to ask you, John, and maybe you just answered my question by having that particular thing. Is the Friday, Saturday as big a deal as some of the boys coaches are making? I have not been in the boys game for a while. I guess I grew up with it as a player. And then in my head coaching experience and varsity experience, I'm just so used to it. Is it that big a deal?
I think the quality of games on Saturday nights show that it really is. Okay. Now when I was in school and played, and I know you coach where I played, we played Friday, Saturday constantly, and I didn't really notice it, but I guarantee that maybe it was quality was down a little bit on Saturdays, because I know it is now. You see teams shoot much worse percentages on Saturdays than Fridays. Free throw percentages go down. I don't want it to be a big deal. Maybe we're not conditioning the kids enough. I don't know, but it does appear to where it is a at least a moderately big deal. I mean, that's why a lot of the other leagues around here don't do it. They'll play non-league games on Saturday, but you even see them on the back end of back-to-backs if you get on like Southeastern Higher Preps, where people are like, man, these back second games of a back-to-back are killers. It's like, well, you do them twice a year, or two or three times a year. We do them 5 times a year in league. So it's just, I would like to see it be changed. I don't know why it is different now, but you know, that is one change I'd like to see.
Shane, I got an honest question for you. Because I'm in a league and have experience, I don't have any experience with these, like I said, just maybe once or twice in 13, 14 years or whatever. But like so many times you have to follow the money. What has been the experience? Do the gates of, you know, having different events not exceed the gate of a one-day event? I mean,
well, it probably does, but you know, they set it up this way with the one opponent, so it's the each school's getting one time to host,
right?
And it's probably, you know, I assume it's different at each school in terms of you'd have to know, I guess, how many different people attend both the boys and girls games all the time.
Yeah,
if that makes sense. Because
yeah.
you know, if Westfall and Uniota played on a separate, you know, Thursday night in girls basketball,
right?
Obviously, some of those same people would be coming and paying another time. You know what I mean? So, sure, that's a valid point. I think a lot of it comes back to the administration, their perspective of this in terms of what they want to do. Throwing it out there as a community event, they kind of sell it as that. And I don't know. I think it's just kind of starting to outlast itself a little bit. I think it was a decent idea up front, maybe, but I know I've talked to different people about what John said, and I have to admit, out of all the alternative plans that I've heard, John, the one you mentioned there, that I've talked to other people about, the Monday Thursday junior high.
Well,
it makes a lot of sense to me.
To me, with the junior high too, I've never coached junior high basketball, but you play Monday, Wednesday right now, so you have one day to prepare in between, and then you are going to have to practice probably Thursday, Friday, Saturday to get ready for that Monday game, because you're probably not practicing on a Sunday. I mean, it's not ideal. So why not make it a little easier and give yourselves 2 days to get ready? A couple things, like, I just want to throw out there, Bruce, Benton County's the TVC, they play almost always Tuesday, Friday, right?
Correct. Most of the time.
Okay. Yes. So our teams we're playing Friday, Saturday. So we don't have a great choice of games to play on Tuesdays if we want to play on Tuesdays, because all the other leagues around here are playing Tuesday, Friday.
Yeah, I should say that's boys Tuesday, Friday, and girls Monday, Thursday.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. So, I mean, it's giving, it makes it a little more difficult for our league to even schedule. Mm-hmm. And so I would think that changing that part up would make the ADs a little happier, because then, you have a lot more choices on your Saturday games instead of playing the second game of a back-to-back or this all-day event. And I mean, I think it was started with best intentions, but I mean, I'll use us as an example again. Our Shane, you remember how the locker room set up, how we had the varsity boys locker room to the left, and then there's the gym locker room to the right. Well, the gym locker room is where the girls teams go. Well, also in that gym locker room, or the girls visiting teams go, in that gym locker room is the restroom, and where you can wash your hands, wash your face. Our boys then would have to go to use the restroom throughout the entire day yesterday, would have to go all the way out to the commons.
Yeah.
Like, if somebody has to go to the bathroom at halftime, they don't have, like, they're going to take 2 or 3 minutes to go do it because they have to go run into the commons and to go
out in the public, like at halftime with the fan. Yeah.
And it's just like, and I don't think the newer schools are built for it. I mean, the one thing for you guys yesterday, were you guys at Edina yesterday or was it
at Paint Valley?
Okay. Well, at least the first time. I mean, Edina's got a bunch of locker rooms.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's that, but man, it's still.
Paint Valley's not set at all. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, well, I wasn't going to say it, but I mean, that's kind of how we are. I mean,
yeah.
I know Westfall's the same way. The other ones might be, but right. You know, it's just, I don't like it. I don't like the all day events, but you know, if they keep going on, I'll keep being at them.
And that's just it. I mean, it is what it is, but if someone's going to ask the opinion, I think these are the discussions that I think what happened closing here, Bruce, is you get a long line of communication and you get a lot of turnover in AD and principals and coaches and so forth. Rarely do you get them all in the room to talk about it, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
usually
sure.
usually the line of communication is this. The principals meet at a meeting, or the ADs meet at a meeting, or at our voting, the coaches meet, and then they're never in the room together. So it's always like, hey, go back and talk to your principals, or hey, go back and talk to your coaches, or go back and talk to your AD. And, you know, I mean, you're just in passing talking, and it's just you have like, you know, 32 different opinions flying out around there from girls' coaches, boys' coaches, ADs, principal. I mean, it's just that's obviously you're going to talk into a lot of circles. So, you know, it is what it is. It's not like we haven't figured out a way to do it. It's just there's a lot of issues with it for sure.
It's sort of a first world problems, but we like to discuss those sometimes.
Exactly.
And if anybody has any input, we would like to reach out and get that as well, and we'll tell you how in just a little bit. Guys, up next, we take a look at our JV leagues, the varsity championship runs, and an early look at the tournament. Well, as promised, we're going to take a look at some JV information, the varsity championship runs that we got going on, and an early look at the tournament here in this segment of episode 242. This segment brought to us by, again, Crown Hill Golf Club. Kevin and the boys up there at 9500 U.S. Route 22 West in Williamsport. Their telephone number is 740-986-4653. They're doing some work with the simulator for our youth right now. And Shane, if you can give us that email address if they're interested.
Absolutely. Junior golfers or people involved in the school programs, it's kidsplaygolf2@yahoo.com. That's kidsplaygolf2@yahoo.com, or of course with the number that Bruce just passed along, give them a call and let them know that SVC Sports Talk sent you.
Yep, 740-986-4653, and of course look them up on the web, crownhillgolfclub.com. Thank you, Kevin. Okay, guys, we're going to go down through this. We're going to go back and forth between boys and girls. First, we're going to take off with the JV boys, Shane.
Well, in the JV boys, John, obviously, you know, the league inside out, and I know your kids, you have a real talented group there. I believe you're one game up in the standings. I know Piketon has a really nice team, really well-coached group. Huntington really well-coached. Maybe highlight a couple of those coaches there and just kind of give us an overview. You don't have to go through every school or anything. Just give us an overview of the league and what you feel like it's accomplishing for the future of our league.
Well, like you said, kind of the I mean, we're up top. Piketon's one game back, and then Huntington's two behind them, or two behind us, and one behind Piketon. Piketon's really gotten hot lately. They play. I think we all play at least some brand of exciting basketball to where it's fun and it's good kind of appetizer for what's coming with the varsity in the games and in the style also. I know those two schools have had kids kind of going up and down this year, kind of getting different times with the varsity. So it's a good chance to watch kids that are going to be playing next year, going to be able to impact rosters. I think the JV league's really well coached, besides Uniota. I mean, the kids play hard. I mean, it's fun to watch kids still playing for something, even if that is at a, you know, not the varsity level. I think that's one of the big differences between JV basketball, you know, JV volleyball, I would say is the same, but most other of our JV sports are played either at a different location or on a different night. Cause I mean, JV football is played on a different day, not in front of the crowd. I mean, obviously on those nights you don't have the time, but, and it's really good for the kids and with some of the bigger crowds to be prepared for the varsity experience. I know when we played Huntington, we went to overtime before the varsity game, and those kids were like, they're just playing hard, and you could tell how much it meant to the Huntington kids to get that win, and you could see how hard they worked for it. So and you could tell that the crowds appreciated that. So I mean, it's a well coached league. I think all the coaches do a really good job of using the pieces they have, and sometimes I know you don't always have those pieces for practice. I know Coach Buckler at Piketon has kids going up and down a lot, depending on who the varsity is going to play. Because I mean, I'll use Shane Leedy as an example of the that played. I think it might have been 3 quarters against my team the first time we played him. Well, the second time he played most of the varsity game, just doing a great job on defense. And there might be another night where he's back with the JV, because it just depends on the matchups. So, I mean, it's a hard level to coach because of that, because you never know what people need. But really, I think it's overall a good league. If you really pay attention, you're going to see a lot of names that you'll see next year and beyond also.
Sure. Well, Bruce, I think what happens there too is some of those schools he's mentioning is when you get coaches that start to spend multiple years with the head coach and in the same program, you start to see that continuity, and mm-hmm. it makes the transition from JV to varsity that much easier. So I think that's something to really watch too. That's good stuff.
All right. Let's talk about JV girls then.
Well, I wanted to comment on the JV Girls League, and then I actually, you know, John, when I passed you, I actually wanted to ask you a question about freshman boys in terms of how it correlates to the JV level, because on the JV Girls, like, we've honestly had a really good league this year, and what's happened is, and this is where the enrollment comes into play a little bit, but what happens is the Uniota program, they just don't have the turnover from start to finish, if that makes sense. You know, the varsity roster is so rock solid that, you know, you have so many really talented Uniota kids just kind of waiting their turn. Now, earlier in the year, we started to have some coaches get really creative in the way they put together their JV teams, so that we tried to have less and less of these two-quarter games. I think the goal around the league was, let's get very creative with our underclassmen and create an environment where we can get more four-quarter games. Well, what's happened throughout the year is the JV league has kind of gone downhill a little bit. Early in the year, I know Adina was able to mix and match some quarters with their young talent, and they were able to put a really competitive product, and they were really able to go toe-to-toe with Uniota a little bit. And then Paint Valley won a really close game against Adina. But then in the second half, if you look, like, I know the Paint Valley-Adina game wasn't nearly as good. Paint Valley won that game in the JV again the other day, but it wasn't nearly the high-level basketball it was the first time. The Uniota Paint Valley game the first time was really, really good. Paint Valley was right there with 2.5-3 minutes to go. The second time, not nearly as competitive, where the Paint Valley team has now changed. The younger Urig girl, Hannah Urig's up, you know, starting varsity now and doing some different things. Different injuries take place and so forth. So Southeastern's had a nice team. They've mixed and matched some kids down. Southeastern's been pretty competitive. So I guess my question is, when you look from freshman boys to JV, you mentioned the kid there at Piketon, I guess, is a little bit of answering this question. Do you see at the JV level especially some teams that maybe are in the middle of the pack down to the bottom of the league standings in varsity, where the JV team you compete against the second go around is just a completely looking team in terms of sometimes a lot better, but sometimes a little bit worse, to maybe where the JV coach has kind of done his or her job and the kid's been asked to move up a little bit.
Yeah, like I can use Westfall as an example. Luke Blackburn, I mean, you see his name on your site all the time. The first time against us, he played three quarters in the JV
game. Wow, yeah.
And now he might be Westfall's best varsity player. And he's a starter and playing most of the game. I mean, that's a JV coach who did his job. I mean, it was – and, like, you kind of see the difference between the JV teams between the first and second time. So it makes it kind of hard to do, like, even a quick scout on them. Because of you never know who's going to be there. It is difficult. Sometimes it goes down a little bit in the kind of not skill level, but the way the game's played the second time. Definitely, because, I mean, like you mentioned, these kids going up and down. It changes how a team is built and kind of how the teams are able to play. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So have we discussed JV girls here? We've already gotten.
Yeah, I think that's good. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's head to varsity and talk first about varsity boys.
Well, Bruce, I think what we're going to do for sake of time, if it's okay here, sure. on each side, we're going to kind of look at these. We talked about the standings a little bit tonight. We're going to look a little bit tournament talk.
Okay.
And I just had some different things I wanted to throw. John will do the varsity boys here first. So looking at the boys side. On the tournament talk, I guess if you had to just overview, I'm not even asking you to look at a particular team. If you had to give an overview, where do you feel like the SVC stacks up around the Southeast District in terms of how we're going to be able to fare here in the postseason?
Well, I think, you know, it's hard to say because it's so much matchup related.
Yeah.
I do think we have a good chance to get, I'll say, three teams to the combo, to where all three of them would have a pretty decently difficult first game down there. I mean, in D2, there's no real easy games. So, I mean, I do think St. Trace is a heavy favorite to get there. They should be the one seed because our whole sectional kind of beat it. It's pretty much all the FAC, and they've beat each other up a good bit. So, and St. Trace's non-league schedules made it to where they're going to be, you know, they have a couple losses, but sure. most teams in our district aren't beating those teams. I like their chances when they get to the district. It's going to be really tough because everyone's got size, everyone's pretty athletic, everyone's got good point guards. But I do really like the way they're built. And I mean, they do have a coach that's won a state championship. And then they've got two really good guards, two really good forwards. I mean, Luke Johnson isn't anything to, sleep on. I mean, it's just, you know, Zane Trace, I like them to be able to make the biggest run. But I mean, really Python's playing a lot better. Adina, I just hope Pike and Adina don't play each other to get to the combo. I mean, I think that it's definitely possible. But I think if both of them are separate, I think I like their chances of getting there. I think injuries wise, it's going to be a little more difficult for other schools. I know they haven't really done anything for me yet, but I still think Southeastern has a chance to that could surprise a couple teams because they're guard heavy, right? And you know, they've got some good size. It's just I think it could be a really interesting March for us. I think we could get three, maybe four teams to the combo. After that, you know, you just roll the dice, see what happens. And I think the league will show well for itself. As long as we have a chance to play against other leagues. I just don't want to see us have to beat each other.
Well, that's always a factor in the matchup. I agree with it'll be interesting to see in the higher division there to see how we stack there. And then, unfortunately, I do think injuries are going to play a part here for the SVC down at Waverly. We'll get to that more in the weeks to come. And no, I think that's pretty well recapped. I think
now,
here in a week or two, we'll know just a little bit more about it.
I do want to say this. I think even with the higher division, I do think Union and Westfall could each win a league or win a tournament game, get themselves into a sectional final where it would be a really difficult matchup. But I do think that'd be good for both programs to, like, for Union to continue playing and getting more practice time, and Westfall with just trying to build something out there, getting a tournament win would be huge for them.
Sure.
What about on the varsity girls' side of the tournament, Shane?
Well, I was going to take this one there, and I guess I feel like, you know, this Uniota team is really complete. They have incredible guard play, as I've talked about. We've really highlighted Fisher, but the depth, you know, beyond just with what Coleman and Koch will give, Pinkerton and Stalley and Miller and Davis and so forth off the bench, there's just they're really, really complete. So you do like them. And then I think the seeding becomes really interesting. Pink Valley's probably in the D4 going to fall into a tough matchup, one that's winnable, but one they'll probably not be favored in. But that'll be interesting because they've played a lot of close games, and they'll certainly be battle tested. A lot of some upcoming doctor appointments and so forth could really dictate where their depth's at and so forth. I think the Adena team's interesting again because you look at where they see, they become a very dangerous team with the way, you know, their record's going to fall. But the Piketon and Huntington there, you wonder where they're going to fall in terms of play. They've played two really competitive games. That's interesting too. Piketon's always a tournament tough team. They're old. They're battle tested. And then Huntington's dangerous from the standpoint of, if we always highlight, anytime you have two kids on a given day, could go for 50 together. You have a chance. So, we talked about Westfall's offensive ability. Southeastern plays a tempo that's very, very hard to play against. So, you know, we have teams that are certainly capable. How many? I'm kind of like John. I'll be able to tell you more, maybe, Bruce, once I see the brackets come out and get a little bit better look at it. But I think that's just an early tournament talk because I know people getting excited to see the brackets, which will be coming out here over the next couple of weeks, first for girls and then boys.
Yeah, I was going to say, girls' brackets come out next Sunday. Is that correct?
Right. And then 2 weeks for the boys.
Okay. All right. Guys, as always, we'll finish off once again with our Coach's Corner. But this week, we add just a little twist. Probably should let that play a little bit longer for Shane because he's probably bopping over there. I'm sure. Yeah. Country music. Anyway, this last segment here of episode 242 brought to you by North Fork Animal Clinic. Dr. Blake Lloyd and staff there take care of your small pets. 740-773-7387, located at 2260 Anderson Station Road. Their hours are Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, Saturday, 9 to 12. And, of course, don't forget the doggy daycare. They've got you covered 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Friday, Saturday and Sunday, 9 a.m. to 6. As we move into Coach's Corners, as I alluded to just before the bump there, we've kind of changed things. We've changed the question just a hair here so the guys can kind of come from a little different perspective. John, we're going to go to you first here as we want you to complete this phrase. Even after a long career of coaching, and you still got some good years left, I'm sure, because you're young, I wish I could figure out blank.
I wish I could figure out how to say the exact right thing every time that I'm coaching, whether it's to kids, officials, parents, whomever, it would just make things so much easier. I mean, coaching 12 to 13 kids at a time, it'd be great to be able to say the same thing and never have to change her tone, and somehow it just hits on all the kids. You know, that's, if we're going to say we wish, this is something I wish for.
Sure.
if I'm talking to an official, I wish I could say whatever I say, and like, and for whatever reason, my face doesn't make a face of looking frustrated, where I like, if I'm just trying to ask a question, I want it to come across as a question, okay. Not maybe something condescending, because I know my tone isn't great. Like, and I try, like I'm doing better, but there's time, you know, it's still can get there. So it'd be something really, one of those, I guess it'd be just one of those cool things to have. Because I mean, really it would make coaching so much easier if you could just coach, if you could just not have to worry about any of the extra other stuff. Probably what I would really like is to just coach at a college, where you just kind of, you have someone who takes care of all your stuff and you don't have to worry about anything except for game planning and press things. But I mean, and maybe scouting or maybe, recruiting, which obviously we're not doing here, but, you know, it'd be, I think that'd be the dream, would be to get out and do that.
He wants to do the John Bruce radio show now. I can see it. Okay. All right, Shane, from your perspective, even after a long career of coaching, I wish I could figure out blank.
Guys, I think the thing I still really struggle with, I go all the way back to my first couple years of coaching, and I wish I could figure out how to balance the short term with the long term. I think sometimes when it comes to building a program, you'll remember earlier in the year when we talked about the microwave and the crock pot, of it's so hard when you're coaching young kids, you know that there are absolutes that you have to do in order for the long term to be successful. But sometimes it's so much easier on a Wednesday night practice when you're getting ready for a Thursday night game to take the shortcut. Does mm-hmm. it make sense?
Yeah.
I mean, like,
yes.
it's so hard because, you know, when I was a young coach, you know, the majority of the nights, I would say back then we played 20 games. I'd say probably in 16 games on the schedule, we were probably the underdog. So a lot of times what was happening was, you know, John, at the varsity level, especially where you're trying to compete, you might junk up your defense, or you might try to do this or do that, or do these little, you know, if a kid can't dribble with his or her left hand, you try to hide it to where they don't have to, or you might, right. You know what I'm saying? Well, guess what? A year from now, you're not going to be able to guard anybody, and that kid still can't dribble with their left hand. Yeah. So it is such a tricky thing for coaches, I think, especially at the varsity level. I think the answer is, I guess, through experience, is trying to get down and really put that time more into the junior high and your summer camps and so forth. Obviously, you've heard me talk about Little League and how difficult that's getting. But even that, even those improvements, guys, are 6-7 years out. You know, I'm talking more about, you know, balancing the team you might be coaching right now, in terms of it's so difficult to prepare for the next game and not kind of keep your eye on the big picture of what you need. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if you can stay at a school for a while and you get that tenure and so forth, you get into that third and fourth and fifth year, I think a lot of this starts to take care of itself. But I think it's really difficult for coaches in their first, second, third year, depending on where the talent in their program is at, to balance. So I know I'm still trying to figure it out, even after for a long career. And I don't know that there's a perfect answer, but it's something that I've been talking to people about and really trying to work hard at.
I love your crock pot versus microwave analogy. That is not only true in coaching, I think that's true in society. And we take mm-hmm. the shortcut. We like the microwave sometime. Look at the way popcorn has gone, Shane. It's gone all microwave now. Yeah. We can't wait for nothing anymore. Hey, guys, contact it wise. You know, we'd like to hear from any of you listening in. And you can contact these guys by using email. For Shane, his email is admin1@svcsportzone.com. For John, his email is jbruce1018@yahoo.com. On Twitter, they're both there. Shane is his handle at @svcsportzone. And for John, his handle is @coconutwallpapa, P-A-P-A. Coconut Wall Papa, and they're both using those hashtags SVC Sports Talk to, so that you can find their streams, if you will, of tweets that go out. And then Shane also has two Facebook profiles where you can contact him. Shane Combs, SVC Sports Zone, and svcsportszone.com. Don't want to forget, Derek Webb's still contributing from time to time, and he's tweeting us out occasionally now. Derek, we tip our hat to you for that because he has a verified account at DW1509 and his email address, DerekW1509@gmail.com. And we want to say happy birthday to him. I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday of this past week. So he's another year older. He's still very young, obviously. So that's our contact information for you, Shane.
All righty. Well, guys, I appreciate it. Another great show. The fan feedback, really good. Love to hear some fan feedback on the all-day event. Let us know about it. We'll talk about it if the feedback deems it necessary. So, guys, appreciate everything. Look forward to getting together again next week. So until that next time here on Triple Crown Family Fun Center, I want to thank you to all the sponsors on the website, to Bruce Knox and all the people there at DBK Media Services, and, of course, to John Bruce. This is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting svcsportzone.com, where we are 100% SVC 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by svcsportszone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. And visit svcsportszone.com, where we're 100% SVC 100% of the time.